This is Company Cars, the podcast that tries to make sense of the car business. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Company Cars. We've been on a brief hiatus lately, not for any particular reason, but mainly because I've had a pretty busy past month. But we're back at it for the summer with a series of new episodes that hopefully you'll enjoy. For those of you who know me, you may have asked me, when's a good time to buy a car? Like, is it better to buy a new car in the spring or in the fall? And you probably heard me give the answer of, the best time to buy a new car is whenever you're ready, because you can always find a good deal. Or some non-answer that's similar to that. But for the first time in history, as far as I can remember, I'm officially going to go on the record and say, it's an objectively terrible time to buy a new car. And so on this episode, we'll talk about why this is the case, and in spite of that, we'll talk about what you should do if you have to go buy a new car right now. So right now, it's an objectively bad time to buy a new car, because there's a general shortage of the necessary parts that are needed to produce new cars. And with consumer demand recovering much faster than people expected, and car shoppers flush with stimulus checks, tax refunds, and funds saved from a year of staying at home, the new car market has kind of hit a perfect storm where we have a spike in demand from consumers that are ready to spend money, and a shrinking supply of new cars because of production and supply chain constraints. So what's happening is kind of classic economics 101, where as the supply of new cars shrinks, more and more shoppers are interested in brand new cars, the price for brand new cars go up, and customers are trying to substitute with almost new cars for new cars. And this can happen either as a function of the brand new cars are being sold for above their retail price, or in some cases, you can't even buy a brand new version of the car without waiting in line because dealers have pre-sold their inventory for June or July. So what's happening is consumers are starting to substitute into nearly new cars, creating this domino effect in used car prices up and down the spectrum as well. So it's driving up the prices of nearly new used cars. So then normally shoppers who buy nearly new used cars are substituting for older cars, and it's going all the way down to the very bottom of the price bracket as well. Furthermore, as leisure travel has rebounded in the US with a storm, rental car companies are desperately trying to get their hands on new cars as well, because last year they sold off a bunch of their cars to raise cash to try to survive the pandemic. And what's happening is this is having a twofold effect in addition to the supply constraints. One, you suddenly have all the rental car companies hurrying around to try to buy as many new cars as they possibly can. And two, rental car companies are a big source of 1 to 2 year old used cars for the market. So they're not selling their old cars as quickly as they used to, and they're desperately trying to buy new cars. And in some cases, they're actually trying to buy 1 to 2 year old used cars too. So this is further magnifying demand for new cars. So this is just all combining to make this perfect storm. So how bad is this perfect storm? So just as a frame of reference, we're going to look at a car that is generally a car that most people know and most people are okay with, but it's not anything that is setting the world on fire. So 2 years ago, before the pandemic, a 3-year-old Toyota Corolla sold for about $14,000 or $15,000. And then at the bottom of the pandemic in May 2020, the same 3-year-old Toyota Corolla sold around $13,000 or $14,000. And today, if you try to buy a 3-year-old Toyota Corolla, it's a $16,000, $17,000, sometimes $18,000 project. So prices are actually far above pre-pandemic levels for the same car. And the issue and price spread is larger the bigger the car you're looking at. So it's creating this strange scenario where you're seeing some 2017 and 2018 pickup trucks and SUVs selling on the used car market for above their original sticker price. And so part of the reason why bigger trucks and SUVs are having a more severe issue is that not all automakers are affected equally. And the automakers that have been hit the hardest are Chrysler, Ford, and GM, who produce a lot of trucks and SUVs. In addition, a lot of larger families are the ones that are driving some of the increased traffic and demand. And these families got more stimulus money because you got stimulus money kind of per person. And so they have more money to spend on cars. And the third factor is pickup trucks and SUVs are in general just much more popular now than they were several years ago. And so we did an episode on crossovers at the beginning of the podcast about this. But pickup trucks and SUVs are what shoppers want today. And so that's kind of where you have the worst of the shortage and you have the biggest chunk of demand. And that's where you're seeing all these crazy stories of pickup trucks being pre-sold months in advance and pickup trucks selling for $3,000, $5,000, $7,000 above MSRP. And so if you try to go to a new car dealer right now, especially if you try to go to a Toyota dealer or a Ford, Chrysler, or GM dealership, you'll notice that the lots are pretty bare, and maybe that the automaker has strategically laid out their cars to make it look fuller than it actually is, but they really don't have a lot of inventory going on. And so the new car manufacturers have had to shut down factories for weeks, sometimes months, and try to prioritize what they're going to produce with the limited chips they have on hand. Some automakers are also selling cars with just one key because each car key also needs its own chip to operate. And so if they can conserve on the number of keys across multiple cars, that's maybe a handful of additional cars they could sell. And that's really unprecedented in the car business. So it's pretty crazy right now. And cars require multiple microchips in the same car. So these microchips power everything from the infotainment system to the fuel economy system to drivetrain management systems to the key. And so if you don't have enough microchips or the right mix of microchips, then you either can't finish the car, or you may have to make a version with lower fuel economy or an infotainment system that doesn't work, or a car with just one key. And what Ford and GM and several automakers are doing is they're building the entire car except for the part that they don't have. And they're parking these cars in fields. And so once they get those chips in, they just have to slot the chip into that particular car and they can ship it. But there's a general critical part shortage of these microchips. And it's just, and what specific module is impacted on each specific car just depends on what combination of chips the car needs. And so how did we get to this shortage in the first place? And I think to explain how we got here, we have to back up to kind of an earlier innovation in automobile manufacturing. And Toyota many years ago pioneered the idea of just-in-time production. So the story goes that a series of Toyota executives went to a grocery store in the US and they noticed that the grocery store was receiving deliveries and then immediately selling the inventory on the shelf. And I think the example they gave was they could see the stock person putting milk on the shelf and then the customer was immediately grabbing it. And up to that point, cars had been manufactured using this kind of like stock up a bunch of inventory and then build from stock. And so all these automakers would accumulate all this inventory like seats and chips and whatnot, and then they would slowly use them through the year. And Toyota figured out this was incredibly inefficient and that they should switch to a grocery store model where basically their suppliers would be the stock boy in the back of the grocery store putting the milk on the shelf, and then the Toyota assembly line worker would be grabbing the part exactly at the right moment when they needed it. And this improved efficiency a whole lot in the car business in terms of manufacturing. And it's incredibly efficient when the supply chain works. But what all the automakers discovered in this pandemic is that this creates this new supply chain risk with the automaker. Because when suddenly parts don't show up for some reason, then you're hit right away. Like you don't have any inventory or safety stock to work with because you've optimized your supply chain so perfectly that you're using stuff the minute it arrives. And so according to CNBC, at the beginning of the pandemic, when a bunch of automakers shut down production because they thought consumers weren't going to buy cars because there was this recession from COVID and they hadn't figured out how to bring their employees back safely, chip manufacturers asked the automakers and said, hey, how many chips do you want to order for the next quarter or the next year? And the automakers all slashed their demand forecast huge because they figured we're entering this big recession. Nobody's going to want to buy new cars. Like, we're just not going to build as many to try to mitigate as much of the damage as possible. So they reduced their orders, and microchips for cars are a long lead time item. So all these automakers, they submit their orders for microchips almost 6 to 12 months in advance. And so about a year ago, they started curtailing their orders. And so the chip manufacturers were like, great, you don't want to order as many, that's fine. We noticed that the computer manufacturers and the TV manufacturers, they're not reducing their orders, they're actually increasing their orders. So we're going to allocate our production facilities to produce chips that are made for computers and TVs. And the chips are different. So whenever they switch production processes, there's a kind of a lag time involved there. And the automakers in the end basically overestimated how far demand would fall and underestimated how quickly demand would recover. So As we got into the third quarter and fourth quarter of 2020, automakers realized this and they said, oh my goodness, we have to ramp up our orders for microchips. So they started ramping up their orders, but by this point, it was kind of too late. And so the chip manufacturers were running at capacity. The computer companies and the TV companies didn't reduce their orders. They actually increased their orders during this period. And so the chip companies just ran out of supply and ran out of capacity to produce both the enhanced computer chip and enhanced TV chip orders and for the automakers to rebound their orders so quickly. And so now the chip manufacturers are kind of struggling to meet demand from automakers to raise production of chips. And so this is kind of a problem of the auto industry's own doing in a way, in the sense that in a year ago, everybody cut their forecasts and thought kind of Armageddon was happening. And we're seeing that those effects now. And so we probably won't see a return to normal for a while, and we'll get to when the chip shortage might end in a minute. But to further add more pain to the problem, there was some semiconductor manufacturing facility incidents that took additional capacity offline recently that made it much more challenging to meet demand from all these different sectors that are suddenly buying all these microchips. And so in particular, there was a facility in Austin, Texas that was offline for a few days because of the Texas winter storms. And there was a manufacturing facility in Japan that suffered a fire in March. And whenever you have a fire at a microchip plant, it takes a long time for them apparently to rebuild the plant and get it up to par to produce microchips again. So that's still a work in progress. And allegedly the Austin plant is took about a month to come back online after it had been shut down. And so we have this supply squeeze that we're seeing now kind of as a consequence of things earlier in the year. And so in addition to a perfect storm of demand that we talked about earlier, we have this perfect storm of supply chain issues. And everything is combining to just make this a huge mess. So when is this chip shortage going to end? And when should this kind of mess in the car market kind of abate? And the real answer is, nobody in the industry knows for sure. So semiconductor and microchip manufacturing takes a long time to add, and there's some conversations about how the chips that cars use are actually kind of an older generation, and so the chip makers aren't necessarily incentivized to add a ton of capacity, because by the time they add it, the chip technology may have moved on to the next generation. And so if you ask industry insiders, you'll get a lot of answers in terms of maybe fourth quarter this year, first quarter next year. Some people think the issues will last deeper into 2022 or maybe even early 2023. So I think if you kind of triangulate across all of these consensus or all these opinions, I'd probably say at least a year. So I suspect we'll probably still have some supply related issues the rest of 2021, and then things will start to catch up in 2022. And maybe by the end of 2022, things will start to normalize again. And the other big question mark here is demand. And so is the current huge rush of demand from car shoppers, is that going to continue at its strong pace? And so just before inventory became a really big constraining factor, the industry was selling cars at an annualized rate of almost 18 million cars a year, which is a gangbusters year for the industry in a normal year. So is demand going to stay that high? Like with people moving to the suburbs after the pandemic, are they going to stay in the suburbs and want to have one, maybe two cars each? Or is demand going to adjust back downwards once the stimulus checks run out, tax refunds run out, and everybody who wants a new car has gone out and bought a new car already? And so that's a really big question as to how sticky this increased demand is going to be. So I guess right now the whole takeaway here is this isn't super short term. So it's not like wait a month to buy a car. It's more like if you're in a position where you can wait a year to buy a car, you probably should. And so it's just a tough time to be out car shopping right now. And now it's time for a short break. We'll hear from our sponsors and we'll share some information about how to submit a listener question. The Company Cars podcast is sponsored by Rejected Conjectures Incorporated, a division of Integrated Derivatives. If you have a question that you want answered on the show, write us an email at companycarspodcast
CompanyCars@gmail.com.
So, after the chip shortage ends, how quickly after that will the car market normalize? As for when the car market's going to normalize, one interesting learning that the industry has taken from the current semiconductor shortage is that a lot of automakers are finding out that before the pandemic, they were holding too much inventory and they were producing too many cars. And that launched this vicious cycle of discounting that led to this race to the bottom on pricing, both between automakers and within an automaker, but between dealers. So once the supply chain issues are sorted, I think inventory and production is going to come back much slower than you might expect. So we'll see an increase in inventory because right now there's so little inventory, just like the housing market, that it's probably hurting the market rather than helping. But we won't see a full return to pre-pandemic inventory levels. So to reduce discounting, I think we'll see automakers bring back 65, 70, 75% of 2019 inventory levels. And what they'll try to do is they'll try to sell more cars closer to MSRP. So they'll tightly monitor what the real-time transaction prices are and try to adjust production to match that. And the other thing is they're also trying to change consumer behavior towards custom orders and people being willing to wait for cars. So historically, the U.S. market has been a relatively impatient one. So we're one of the few sell-from-stock markets in the world where we expect our dealers to carry tons and tons of inventory. And let's say we wake up on a Tuesday and we decide we want to go buy a car. We expect to be able to go down to our local dealership and find a car that we like. Whereas in a lot of Western Europe and in parts of China and Japan, shoppers will come to a dealership, they'll look at a car, and then they'll place an order for one, and they'll be able to order it exactly how they like or exactly how their company tells them they should order the car, and then you wait a few weeks, and then the car comes in. So I think there's going to be this shift where we'll see more and more custom orders. I mean, before the pandemic, there was kind of this pattern of if you tried to do a custom order, not a lot of dealers were willing to do it. Some dealers were more adept at it than others. Some brands were better at it than others. And people kind of looked at you like you were an alien for trying to do a custom order. But I think that's becoming more and more the norm now just because of the inventory shortage and people having to commit in advance to what they want and then wait for it to come in. So the interesting thing is we will see how automakers change their pricing strategy in the next round of cars that they release. And so the current crop of cars that are out there, the pricing strategy was probably set 2 to 3 years ago in terms of where they were going to set MSRP, how much they wanted to spend on incentives to get to an actual transaction price, which we discussed in the previous episode. But we'll see maybe that assumption on how much in incentives they want to spend and where they want to set MSRP. We'll probably see that gap tighten a little bit. So we'll probably see automakers kind of assume that, oh, we don't have to spend that much on incentives because we've seen from the pandemic that consumers are willing to pay MSRP at the right time. So the automakers will try to manage their production better so then they have to spend less on incentives so they can get closer to full sticker price, which makes everybody happy, makes the automaker happy because there's less room for negotiation and negotiation can severely affect the customer experience. And it makes dealers happy because it makes the deals more profitable if dealers don't have to provide as much dealer discount to the end consumer. All right, so what if your car just died and you have to buy a new car now? Well, if you have to go to the market now because your car just died, you have to go to the market. But I would suggest that you be a little flexible and maybe open-minded in searching for the car that you actually want to buy. Not everything is equally affected by the shortage. So the shortage is most acute, like I said earlier, in large trucks and SUVs. Some automakers are more affected than others. I think Nissan is only now seeing some effects, whereas Toyota and Ford and GM and Chrysler have been affected for several months now. So different automakers are affected in different ways, and also different products are affected in different ways. So I think midsize sedans and compact sedans, there's still fairly reasonable supply of those out there. Those were not very popular before the pandemic, and they were declining in popularity. And so that's not what the current crop of consumers are looking for. But if you're looking for like a Toyota RAV4 or Subaru Forester, kind of like a compact SUV, midsize SUV right in the heart of the market, then it's a bit of a tough time for those cars. And so a lot of dealers have extremely low inventory right now. And so you won't be able to deal or trade where one dealer goes to another dealer to get the car that you need. So you're going to have to do that yourself. So if you want a specific color or a specific trim, I would do a national search for a new car and then see where you find exactly what you're looking for. I would also make sure, as always, to get price quotes from multiple dealers, because different dealers are taking different approaches to how to manage their inventory. So some dealerships are marking up prices above MSRP, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, I've seen $8,000 above MSRP, and other dealers just are fundamentally opposed to the idea of marking cars up above MSRP, and I would agree with those dealers. But those dealers are also probably the ones that don't have as much inventory right now because consumers have figured out that that's where they should buy their cars. So I would try to find one of those dealers and try to work with them to either buy a car from their incoming allocation. So every month or every couple weeks, dealers receive a list of cars that they're going to be receiving in the next 2 to 4 weeks. And you can try to purchase something that's on its way in, assuming it hasn't already been allocated. I would also maybe try some different categories. And so if you are thinking about a compact SUV, maybe see if you're open to owning a midsize sedan, for example. It's about the same price. It's about the same interior volume. It is a little less practical because it's a sedan instead of an SUV. But another solution would be to lease right now. And that way that buys you 2 to 3 years to just have transportation to tide you over until things improve. And then in the next car that you get, you can get something that you like. I'd also point out that right now, because resale values for used cars are so high, we're starting to see this show up in new leases. So what's happening is that should make leasing relatively more attractive than it was a year ago, because leasing, you pay the difference between the estimated future value of the car and the price of the car today, and that depreciation is the amount of the car you've used up. So if the expected future value of the car goes up, then the cost of leasing relative to purchasing should come down a little bit. So I would maybe explore leasing if that's something that you're open to. But I guess the general idea here is be flexible. And if you're thinking about buying a car, but you don't know if you want one and your current car is fine, I would wait. Full stop. I would wait a year. I would wait 18 months before you buy that new car. So I would really only go to the market right now if you absolutely need a new car or your current car is just not working out for you. Like, let's say you have a 2-seater sports car and you're pregnant. And so you can't put a car seat in the passenger seat of some convertibles. And so you might need to go and buy a car with a back seat. So a situation like that, yeah, totally understandable if you need to go to the market or your old car has been totaled or died and it's too expensive to repair. But I would really, really try to avoid going to the market right now if you can. So what if my lease is maturing? Let's say I lease a car. What should I do if my lease is up and I have to get a new car? And so one interesting thing about leases that maybe you haven't thought about is that I would check to see if you have positive equity in your lease. So historically, this has been an almost impossible occurrence, but because used car values are at an all-time high, the odds are actually quite high right now that you have positive equity in your lease, which means your car is worth more than your lease payoff amount. So if you want to find out if you have positive equity in your lease, you can get an appraisal on your car, either from a dealer, CarMax, Carvana, Vroom, Shift, any of these online iBuying services, with your lease, and compare that amount that they offer you for the car with your lease payoff slash buyout amount, which you can obtain by calling your lender. And leasing companies realize that consumers are taking advantage of this. So they're starting to put up all these different hoops and saying, okay, no other dealer can buy out your lease, only you can buy out your lease, and or you can turn it in back to us and we're going to sell it and make money. Some other lenders will have a different buyout amount for you specifically versus a dealer slash somebody else. So if your payoff is below market, they may charge the stranger buyout number much higher. So you might want to compare and clarify what your payoff number is with the appraisals and make sure that the appraisal value is higher than your stranger buyout number or higher than your individual payout number plus taxes and fees, because usually when you buy out your lease, you'll have to pay taxes and fees because you're technically buying the car from the leasing company. But if you like your leased car and your individual buyout number is less than a CarMax offer, so you could buy it for below market, which is very likely, I would seriously consider buying out your lease and just driving your leased car another 3 or 4 years until things stabilize a little bit. Because the reality is, you won't be able to buy the same car for the same money right now. It's going to cost you probably several thousand dollars more than whatever your lease payoff number is. So if you like your car, I would seriously consider it. Normally, you don't enter a lease thinking that you're going to buy it at the end, because otherwise you would have just bought it in the beginning. But times are strange. The market's a strange place right now, and a lease buyout can sometimes make a lot of sense right now, where it historically probably didn't make a ton of sense. But if you do want to turn in your old car or sell your old car and lease something new, you're going to see some sticker shock. So there won't be the same amount of incentives as there were 3 years ago. So leasing the same car might cost $30, $40, $50, $100, $150 more per month versus what you paid 3 years ago, depending on how good of a deal you got then. So if you leased, you're in a unique position where if you need to switch cars, you can make money by potentially flipping your car, by selling it to a dealer or selling it to CarMax slash Carvana slash Vroom slash Shift. And if you like your car, your buyout number is probably going to be more attractive than buying a similar car on the open market. So lessees are in a really interesting situation right now, a situation I never thought that they'd be in. So certainly a unique situation that I would right now I would definitely check to make sure if your lease payoff is lower than the CarMax appraisal for your car, because there's an opportunity to make money there if you didn't want to keep your car. And with current market conditions in mind, we're taking a brief break from the Craigslist challenge because it's probably pretty hard to find any particularly good deals right now. And I've been looking, and the market's pretty boring, and there's not a ton of inventory out there in general. So the Craigslist challenge is on vacation briefly. So without listener questions, and with rental car companies also squeezed for rental cars, it's a tough time to do rental car roulette. So we're gonna do a series of episodes over the next few months that are focused around one topic each. So kind of the additional segment section of the show will be gone for a bit. But hopefully we'll be able to bring it back in the fall when markets calm down a little bit, and hopefully when rental car companies start to have a little more inventory that they can rent out cars with. And with that, thank you for listening to the show this week. Thank you for being patient with me as I've had to take a few weeks to do some things tied to my day job. And have a great summer for now. Stay tuned for more content, and stay tuned for our ending credits in just a second. Of course, it takes a whole village to make a podcast, and so we want to make sure we give due credit to the individuals involved with making this podcast. Our chief technical advisor is Turn It Off and On, and our legal and strategy consultant is Bill Me Moore. Finally, we're assisted by our product planner, Ada Trim, and our finance and insurance manager, Mark Up the Rates.